You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm the host of this wonderful podcast. And join me on the other line, a guy who's on way too much of this podcast now because we're not talking almost every single day, and a guy who did not sign with the Detroit Pistons, unlike every other player that was a free agent this season, is Mr. Tony East from Forbes.com and Indianapolis Community News. Tony, how are you doing?
I'm good. You're right. I did not. I turned down a $1.6 million offer from the Pistons to continue to do this podcast with you, Adam. So, no, I did not sign with the Pistons.
Detroit's going to have quite a couple of days here. They, let's see, they signed like, you know, I don't know, seven free agents, and then they play on the Thanksgiving primetime game against a really, who do they play? The Texans, I believe. Really bad
team. In actual basketball terms, the Pistons are going to suck, which is great for the Pacers, who are going to play them many times this year.
Yeah, do we know how many times yet? Have they officially said?
I think for division teams, it's only four, actually. But that's still more than every other team, so there you go. The Pistons kick the Pacers' butts, like, randomly every year, and so this year, hopefully, it's different.
Well, you know, you probably just jinxed them now. But well, that's not what we're here to talk about today. So we're going to do three topics today. One, we're going to talk about how coaching change can help the Pacers go in the next season. Now that we have a set roster, we can do a little more details on that. Then we're going to talk about how important health is to this roster, particularly certain players like Oladipo, Sabonis, Brogdon, you know, Lamb, players like that. And then we're going to talk about some of the internal growth in terms of particularly some of the younger players, but even just anywhere from basically Aaron Holagogo all the way up to the top of TJ Warren. So that's what we're going to do today. But obviously, like I said, we're going to start with coaching. And I think,
well, hold up. The thesis of all these segments, if you didn't catch the theme or read the title of this podcast before you listened, is a sentiment I've seen a lot on the internet is, so they didn't do anything, you know, okay, they're not going to be any better next year. Well, okay, they might
doing
not.
Doing nothing,
you
know, is doing something.
That's true. Other teams did sign new players. Other teams did get better, and it's very possible they jumped the Pacers. I will concede that, you know, just on paper, yeah, Pacers looking like 6-7 range. But I want to talk about and address the people who say they didn't get any better, and that's what these segments are all about, is how they can get better despite not signing guys. This isn't like a puff piece. This is just, you know, other teams are doing this year. Like, other teams are also sitting on their hands and looking like not doing anything. But it is it can be tactical, and it can be a way to get better. So take it away.
Yeah, I will say of the five teams better than the Pacers in the East, the Bucks got better with Holiday. The Celtics got worse by losing Hayward. Yep. Nets get better because they're everybody's healthy. Sixers got better because of they made some tweaks. No, they're not like crazy better, but they're marginally better because they made some better moves to make the floor stretch out. But they still have the same internal issues. They still have the same big two issues that – between Simmons and Embiid that could linger. And then I would say the Raptors got a little worse. I mean, not like a ton, but they did lose Serge.
The Heat got about the same, probably a little worse.
Yeah, and that was my 16. So the Heat are the same. So not a ton has I mean, like marginally the East, probably the teams that got better were already better than the Pacers or the Nets were going to be. And the teams that got worse might be on the Pacers level now. So, I mean, I don't know. It's kind of a
Well, and like – like the Sixers, a lot of their improvement could be a coaching change, and the Pacers have that, and that's what this first segment is about too. And the Nets also have a coaching change, you know what I mean? Like, that's a common theme in these groups as well. And that's where we're starting, because, look, it doesn't take a genius to know that McMillan, for all that I said nice things about him, he kind of sucked in the playoffs and was really rigid and thought that his plan was genius and going to work every time despite it never working ever. And he even said, this is per his own admission, this is surprising to hear, but per his own admission, right, that if he couldn't get this team out of the first round, he probably shouldn't be the man for the job. He says he told KP that before the season. Now, Sabonis was out this year, whatever. But, you know, to me, I think he kind of knew he was not a good playoff coach. And even if he's a decent regular season coach and not a playoff coach, one way I think the Pacers can be better is right there. They switched out the thing, and KP identified it. The old coach even identified it. We've heard, you know, reports of certain players having rifts with McMillan. They identified that this is clearly a weakness, and they got a guy that they think will make them better. And that's one area that I think is a big one.
Yeah, I mean, I think the big area that will get better at, hopefully, is just with better rotations and more unique, which maybe is the right way to put it, and just a more creative offense. I mean, the hallmark of the Pacers going back, we've seen three different iterations of the McMillan offense. No, I guess it's three. You go two and a half, right? So you've got the first one of PG and Jeff Teague and Thaddeus Young. Then you get the Oladipo, Thaddeus Young, kind of Miles Turner one. And then you kind of get the Oladipo, less. One where he's, you know, in and out of the lineup, but then you get Brogdon in there and you get Warren in there and Turner Sabonis. So you've seen kind of three different iterations. They mainly had the same success, right? I think if we look at offensive rating just year after year, they were, let's see, last year they ranked
middle of the road, 15 to 10 range.
19th in 1920, 18th in
18-19. Ah, 20 to 15.
Yeah, 17-18 was their best year. 11th is because Oladipo just carried that offense to a crazy level. And they're 15th and 16-17. So basically three times being between the 15 and 19 spots. So it's, you know, pretty consistently average. That's the right way to put it. And that's what you hope to improve. The defense now, what has been their hallmark the past couple of years, at least, has been an incredible defense. You know, I think the past 2 years, it was sixth last year in defensive rating and third the year before then. That will be a question. Again, they can keep that up. But I do think there's something to say as if you increase the pace, which has always been in the bottom third of the league and whatnot, whether your ratings can get, you know, stay similar, because rating is based on points allowed per possessions and point score per possessions. So you can give up a lot of points, but if you have a ton of possessions, it actually is more valuable, kind of like the Warriors kind of brought that into the modern era right now with those kind of teams. But so, yeah,
see,
I mean, I,
so that's those are kind of the spots. See, that's why the Pacers last year, not the most efficient team ever, bad shot profile, but they were fifth in turnovers, right? It's like you're saying, they had a lot of possessions. So they didn't maximize the points part, but they maximized the possessions part, and that's how they were able to have at least a capable offense despite McMillan not letting them shoot shots that would let that number go higher.
Yeah, I don't know if it's not letting them shoot them or not beating it into their minds that they shouldn't be shooting shots.
Yeah, or calling the right sets way to encourage them, right? Because
– yeah, yeah.
It wasn't a roster thing. For a while, I thought I gave him a tiny benefit of the doubt that, like, on the Collis and Bojan teams, that was it. Those were the only two guys who were above average shooters, right? Corey Joseph was not a good shooter. Lance wasn't. Victor, for a little bit, was, but is not. Thaddeus Young, no. Miles is about average. Sabonis, no. You know, everyone who was on those teams in the rotation, Tyreek Evans, no. Who else? McDermott came in and was pretty good. But they didn't have shooters. So for a while, I gave him a tiny benefit of the doubt that he's playing to personnel, you know, and they were bottom five in attempts every year he was here, and I think the last year Vogel as well. They had a three-year stretch in consecutive years where they were bottom five in attempts but top five in percentage. This year, they actually had shooters. Brogdon, historically good efficiency with the Bucks. McDermott, obviously scorching. Justin Holiday, scorching. Aaron Holiday, great shooting. Warren got above 40% again. You know, they have the shooting now, and he still didn't let guys take him. So to me, that is right there. Not recognizing a strength of your roster, and then also not having the creativity like Bjorkgren is supposing to have, and Kevin Pritchard apparently seeing this brilliance in the interviews, to dial up plays to get these threes to get the team. And I don't want to just say they're going to shoot more threes, they'll be better. But that was a big, big, big gap in Nate McMillan's basketball knowledge, is he wouldn't emphasize it enough. So I think that is somewhere that they can get an improvement, is just the creativity from Bjorkgren to better utilize his players and their strengths.
Yeah, I mean, something that I like to look at in terms of, like, on the kind of numbers line is nowadays teams want to shoot basically two shots. They want the three-foot shot or they want a three-point shot, because both are the most efficient, right? And in terms of ways to see how many shot teams are taking from those spots, you can look at free throws, I think, are going to look at, because usually if you're taking close-range shots, you're probably getting fouled consistently more. And then obviously three-point shots you can kind of track. Well, the Pacers last year ranked 30th in three-point attempts and 30th in free throw attempts. So that just kind of shows their shot profile, right? Because you don't get a lot of – you just don't draw as much contact with 15-footers. You just don't. Correct. A lot of them are just open space. Teams let you take them, whatnot. Well, a team like the Bucks, for example, ranks 6th in free throw attempts and 4th in threes. And they were obviously the best team in the league in terms of record-wise. I mean, I'm sure the Rockets would show similar numbers, if not even better numbers. And so that's something just – like, there's an easy improvement right there. And it's simply, let's spread out a little more. You know, let's run a lot of pick and rolls with Sabonis and Oladipo, or Sabonis and Brogdon, and tell guys to go to the rim and just try to, you know, draw contact constantly, and at least we'll get some of those. And then at the worst case, you kick it out. I mean, there's a lot of, like, I think easy small tweaks here that, like, could lead to just, like, a huge improvement, if that makes sense, right? Like, if all of a sudden they're the 15th in 3-point attempts and, you know, 50th in free throws, oh, now looking at a team that maybe goes from being, you know, what did I say last year? They were 19th in offense to, like, 10th in offense. And that's a big improvement, right? I mean, the only way I would guess, look at conference finals teams, most of those teams that are in the conference finals every year are top 10, either top five in one of offense or defense, or top 10 in both, or top, you know, 10 to 15 in both, right? That's, I know in the finals champions, there's never, you have to be top five in almost both to be, when you look at the final champion of the year, barring some outliers where a team, you know, like crazily.
Defensive studs.
Yeah. Or yeah. Like a lot of times you'll have the number one defense and like the 20th offense, but your defense is like like the Pistons in 04 is so much better than everybody else. Or you have these weird things where LeBron won't try in their season, his team will be terrible and he'll run off, you know, great playoffs. Yeah. But mainly, consistently, you see that if you're kind of top five at both or one at top at one and in the top, you know, 10 in the other, you're like consistently going to be in a conference final and an NBA finals competing. And so that's what they got to do is get to that point at least.
And some of it's easy for Bjorkren, like maximizing offensive efficiency, even beyond just focusing on threes and free throws. And we are, he even said that in his presser. He talked about it. It's just low hanging fruit, cutting out the fat kind of stuff where like Miles Turner pops and his feet are on the line, or they're on floppy and Doug McDermott turns too quickly, or whatever shooter turns too quickly, or TJ McConnell takes a post fadeaway or something like that instead of hunting a little longer for the right shot. You know, that's like, if you cut those out, there's probably 7 or 8 of those shots a game. If you could trade those for better shots, that's a lot of efficiency over time that really adds up quickly. So that's just low-hanging, easy fruit. And other low-hanging fruit is like you and I, who are not even the most astute X's and O's observationalists. Not, you know, I know generally what I'm – like what a set is, like what it's called, but I don't know what.
If I see the same thing over and over again, I can tell what it is, but like right. I'm not somebody that's gonna be like I know exactly. Draw this up. This equals this. Like I can't. I'm not
quite that good at it. But you and I could predict in a lot of situations what the Pacers were going to run because Nate McMillan did not have that creativity, or he you know, like the play that worked in India. Out of bounds
plays were terrible.
Yes, out of bounds plays.
Giving me nightmares right now as you talk about them.
Awful, right? So if Bjorkren can add some value there, that's other just low-hanging, easy, improve your offensive efficiency steadily fruit and cutting out fat stuff that's just easy. And that's one, I think, another way. And remember, they were on pace to win over 50 games last year if the game had been 82 games. Like, if there's even just minor improvements internally, like, that's a 55-win team. Like, that's a really good team all of a sudden.
Yeah, and the thing I think about, too, is the out-of-bounds.
We're only talking about offense. Defense.
Yeah,
we'll get to defense in a second.
The thing about the out of bounds play is, so like I think I've said this before in the podcast, and I've probably said to you like 30 times, so I'm just repeating myself because I do this every year. But like in a basketball game, there's chaos. There's only like one or two times kind of plays that a coach can actually control what's happening on the court, and those are out of bounds timeout plays are usually one of those plays where they can control what actually happens. And so being better than average or being very efficient in those plays shows how good a coach can be, right? I mean, a lot of basketball is the players, right? Are the players talented? Can they execute in the right moments or not? But like, if you can steal a few points here or there in a game, which over the long run obviously can be valuable, if you can, you know, draw four good out of bounds plays in a game and get, you know, go 4 for 4 and have 10 points, right? And that kind of stuff.
Right, Steven does that.
Yeah, Steven does. Steve Kerr was really good at that. I mean, they used to talk about Steve Kerr when he came into the league, like he had like notebooks of sets that they could run out of bounds and all these kind of plays. And you would see them, you know, when they really were having the Warriors were at their peak, just running some ridiculous plays where Steph would get like a 30-footer wide open and they would just let him take it kind of stuff. And you're obviously not going to see that with the Pacers, but there's still a lot of things that they could run that could work. And you just never really saw that before. You saw always, I mean, if you come disjointed out of a timeout, that's concerning as a coach. That means you're not coaching your players that well if they don't know what they're doing out of a timeout. I mean, that's kind of that level of like, are you good or bad? And if you can't, and McMillan wasn't terrible at it, but he wasn't, I wouldn't call him great at it. Yeah, he was at it.
The other side of the ball, maybe this is too just like Pacers covered glasses way of looking at it. So obviously Dan Burke was amazing at his job and McMillan is a good defensive coach. They deserve lots of credit for that. They got the Pacers to buy in on that end, 88 out of 82 games, 78 out of 82 games, whatever. So there is that factor, or they could be worse just by losing those two. I'm all of the opinion from player perspective that having Miles Turner on your team guarantees you a top 17-15 defense, right? Like the way he just discourages and deters shots at the rim automatically helps your defense a ton. Like Rudy Gobert is better than Miles at a lot of that stuff. He probably gets the Jazz to top – I mean, I think the worst they've been with him on the team is 11. So let's just say top 11 is guaranteed – with Rudy Gobert back there, right? Miles is the worst defender, but he's still really good. I think that a top – I'll just pick 17. That's just a kind of a random number. But, you know, very close to average, if not better than average, is guaranteed with him on the roster. Plus, Brogdon's a smart defender. If Vic is engaged next year, we've seen he can be a good defender. Warren was a good defender last year. So, some of that is the teachings of Dan Burke, and they didn't just, like, forget the things he taught them when he left. So, their defense – if it does take a step back because that's not Bjorkren's specialty, I still think it'll be good. But hopefully, I'm hoping, and if you're a Pacers fan, that's the same way, that Bjorkren's offensive creativity and his ability to maximize his players, and we'll see what that actually manifests itself to be, is more than any defensive loss that happens, if any, right? He called up the box and won in the finals that one year, right? He clearly has some ingenuity on the end before. So just seeing how much that balances, or if at all, if he improves them on both ends, even better. But, you know, the defense is another thing about it too.
Weirdly, is Miles Turner underrated after Boston chose to take Tristan Thompson over him, basically? Is he underrated now?
Low Post was talking about yesterday, Zach Lowe. His value maybe being lower than perceived, like quick heel turn. A lot of that's just because Sabonis ruined his value by having the ball so much, right? But I think that they just thought they could extract more and got too greedy, and the Hornets swooped in and changed everything. Like, they just had to get Tristan Thompson because they could no longer get Miles. I think they'd rather have Miles, but you know, Thompson's a fine backup plan. But yeah, you know, exactly what you're saying is correct. He is useful on defense. He elevates the team. And if he's on the roster for a trade, then what I just said is all moot. But I think that if he's there and Brogdon's there and they have some good bench defenders as well, and by that I mean Justin Holiday mainly, but they're guaranteed to be – there's no way they're in the bottom 10 of defense. So if their offense can elevate to a good enough point, this is just on coaching they can get quite a bit of improvement.
Yeah, and we'll talk more about the defense and all this stuff as we move on forward, because we'll have a lot of time to do coaching and breakdowns, especially in the season and whatnot, and as we start to understand Bjorkgren's philosophy. I hope I said his name right. But let's do this. Let's make a turn and talk about player health. But first, today's Locked On Pacers podcast is brought to you by Bilko. Bilko is an amazing energy gel. Whether you're trying to break through the mental or physical wall, it helps you go every day. They come in these easy 1.5-ounce packages that you can put in your backpack, your briefcase, your golf bag, or even just your back pocket. It is one of the best workout gels on the market. It's kind of like a 5-hour energy without the same crash and a kind of more natural feeling for your body. They come in 3 delicious flavors, peanut butter honey, Java coconut, and chocolate milk. It combines an energy gel with some collagen protein and a little kick of caffeine, which I would tell you is very much needed before your workout today. I went on a run, drank a little coffee, got a little kick before then. I tried one of these. They are great. And right now, go to visit. If you go to Bilko.com, use promo code LOCKED, you'll get 20% off your next order. Use promo code LOCKED for 20% off your next order at Bilko.com. Let's go. All right, Tony. So I think another big thing that will help the Pacers going into next season is just health. So obviously, they missed it most in the playoffs, which was a huge piece. But the other piece that I think that we both were underrating is just having a healthy Victor Oladipo going into the regular season at the start of the year makes this team just better. They just have a better starting five from the beginning.
So, yeah, just rattling it off, like, this is just counting numbers. So Sabonis missed 11 games last year. That's my mic just tipped over. That's about expected. TJ Warren missed 6. Brogdon missed 19. Math is hard.
Miles 73, missed, not 82.
I know it's hard to do it in backwards. Miles missed 11. Lamb obviously missed a bunch of time. Victor only played 19 games. The bench guys were pretty healthy. Aaron was healthy. Doug was healthy. Justin played every game. But the starters, the guys you need to be playing more often to be good, all missed over 10 games except for Warren. That's a problem, right? All the guys were supposed to leaving minutes missed a bunch of time. And then Sabonis missed the playoffs as well. So the first one is obviously Vic, right? He played 19 games. He keeps saying in his media availabilities that he's still improving his health. You know, it's a constant goal for him. Sure, it's alarming to me that it's been almost 2 years and you're still working on that. But if it's true, we can see him improving his confidence and abilities on the court, then yeah, that's one. Right off the bat, that will help them be better as him closer to 100%. Or him just having more time to be used to his body. And then the rest of the guys are all gravy, right? Turner misses about 10 games every year, whatever, but Brogdon needs to get his health better. If he can get that up a little bit, that helps a ton. Sabonis as well. It just, their health can't really be worse than last year, right? They got a guy back from a year-long
injury. Okay, Turner, let's not jinx him now. You're going to jinx him.
Touche. They had their guy come back from an over year-long injury to then immediately lose a different kind of key guy to a different year-long injury, right? Like, that's just brutal luck.
Yeah, I mean, it can always get worse. So I don't want to like.
Yeah, not
I don't want to say that, but I get what you mean. I mean, the key with the team this year, that's going to be again kind of on coaching, is how to manage minutes and how to manage playing in terms of like back to backs and how many that's going to be. And because I'm assuming we're gonna have a little bit tighter schedule than most years, just because of 72 games over a shorter span of time. And so that's going to be like a key is you know, are they going to play Sabonis 35 minutes? And now Sabonis was pretty much healthy all year long, except for, you know, basically he got plantar fasciitis like right before the bubble, and he had an ankle injury in the midseason, right? He like fell on somebody wrong, remember, right? And like that, like he's usually pretty healthy, right? And obviously everybody else, you know, had their sporadic injuries that we kind of see. But yeah, I mean, the thing I would say is even if Vic is still getting back, I think his concern, I guess injury wise, seems like it's he hasn't still played a ton of games, right? He's now 2 years removed from the injury almost, and he's only played like what, playoff 23 total games. And that's just, you would usually expect at that point him to have played almost a full regular season, or at least, you know, 40 games, and he would kind of know his body better. I think he's still figuring it out, right? And hopefully those 19 games and especially the 8 in the bubble in the playoffs will help him sort of have gotten a little bit of a footing, understand what he needs to work on and whatnot. Because the one thing you could definitely tell, I thought, in the bubble was there's a kind of a disconnect between his body and his shot and kind of his mind, if that makes sense, right? He just couldn't quite, like, put the dribble, the handle together with going to the rim and finishing around the rim, right? Because that used to be his, like, especially with being able just to close around the rim and whatnot. So, you know, I think he's still getting better, and I don't necessarily take that as, like, a bad thing that he's not fully there yet just because he's played so little games and the pandemic, you know, cut off 6 months basically of this for him. And so it's hard, especially in that kind of right in that prime time, right? He was just kind of getting back, you know, right when the pandemic hit. So I understand why he's still, like, reluctant to say he's 100% healthy and whatnot. But I don't know. I think there's a lot of signs point towards his health just being better. The team is very deep this year too, so there's some of that where you could see some 11-man rotations that could provide, you know, they're special deep in guard. You want to play Aaron Holland and Sumner. So there's some of that where you could see maybe him only playing 28 minutes a game and maybe only playing 60 games, but mainly only, but not because of injury, because of rest, right? He rests 5-6 of them and misses, you know, another 5-6 for, you know, random elements that happen to players.
I absolutely agree with that. I think he's the – when you say injuries are a way they can improve, he is the – magnum opus is the wrong word. He is the key focus of that sentiment. If he is better or more healthy or more consistent, any of those three, really, the team's a little better, and they don't have to have the BS three games where he's coming off the bench and has a weird minutes restriction too. They lost all three of those games. Shocking. You know, stuff like that's just not going to happen. And Jeremy Lamb might be worse, but maybe he'll be healthy. I think the other key guy to focus on for me is Brogdon.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he missed, what did I just say, 19 games last year. That's a lot. And this is a thing for him. This is, you know, for him, it's different. His rookie year, he played 75 games. Things are looking up, wins rookie of the year. And then 48, 64, and 54. So he's missed, that's 18 games the year before joining the Pacers, where he missed 19. He's missed a lot of games every year. He is injury prone. Like, I think that's a miscast for Hayward, who just had freak injuries. Brogdon had like 9 or 10 reasons he missed a game last year. So he actually is injury prone, and him getting healthy is just so crucial to me because he's so good for them. He was probably their second best player last year. They just need him more often. Third best player last year. They just need him more often.
Yeah. I think that's what depth too, what's going to be the key with him is I think getting him nights off selectively to help him just as rest. And I do wonder if they decide they want to maybe play 10 or 11 guys, making sure nobody plays basically more than 30 minutes. I'm going to pull up the Raptors roster real fast because I don't have it up, but I'm pretty sure, like, at least in the Kawhi season, they were playing like 12 guys deep. I mean, they figured out that, like, which isn't important, and they still won a ton of games that were second in the East that year. But if you look at their roster that year, I mean, Kawhi only played 60 games, Lowry 65, Pascal ended up playing all 80, and Danny Green played all 80. But, like, any guy who played over, you know, 70 games was only playing 27 minutes a night. It's just, you know, when Lowry and when Leonard did play, they played 34 minutes, but they had rarely had any guys that were actually playing, you know, every night that are playing more than 27.7 minutes. And that's what you have to do, right? It's not pushing. That was one of McMillan's kind of things that I always kind of hated, is I felt like he was playing guys too many minutes for no reason. Like, they'd be up 15 and they would bring back Brogdon, or he'd bring back.
That was the worst.
Oldie,
but 30 at the end of the game in the start.
Yeah, and you would think, oh, what's the matter? Nobody got hurt, not a big deal. But, like, over time, that just wears and tears. And you just, like, if you can get, like, you know, and the Warriors, go back to them, obviously, are the best that used to be, right? They would, Steph wouldn't even play fourth quarters half the time. I mean, if you can get a guy less minutes over time, it's a big thing for his body because they're one less, you know, random ankle turn away from missing four games or whatever. So that's going to be the key, is relying on the depth. I mean, for God's sakes, I'm looking at the Raptors from 18, 19. I mean, they had 13 guys play over 40 games, I think. No, I'm sorry. 12 guys play over 40 games, and each of those guys played 15 or more minutes. And a bunch of guys playing 18, 18, 18, 20, 24, 27, 27. I mean, that's just – they went heavily into depth that year.
Yeah, they did. That's smart. And then the Pacers need to do that, right? Brogdon, when he played, 52 in pace team, 34 and 20 with him on the court. They obviously could use that next year. Warren's been was an Iron Man last year. He's had injury concerns in the past, right? They have to monitor that and keep an eye on Sabonis's foot. Maybe give him the needed rest, right? They have Goga, they have Miles, they have a deep team in general. They, you know, they have the depth to do that. I think they need to lean in on that because that is, with the right coaching, the second way that I think is very obvious that they can be better next year is just better luck with help. And, like, who knows what – you know, maybe McMillan's still the coach, so this is, you know, another fool's thought. But who knows what the outlook on the team is if they have Sabonis in the playoffs and they lose in six, like everybody predicted, right? If they're fully healthy and the team that makes the finals beats them in six games, no one is, like, freaking out about them running it back. You know what I mean? Like, a coaching change would be enough at that point. Getting swept totally kills them, and they didn't have Sabonis. And that's, again, there's a lot of Pacers colored glasses going on in this episode. Yeah, they didn't sign anybody, so we kind of have to figure out how they can get better. But I think that is an influence on this discussion as well.
I will say it makes our player reviews and talk about how they're going to do next year look really good at this point. If you
haven't listened to those, because we talked about every guy. Yeah,
every guy, and they're all back.
Remember the Alize Johnson episode where I talked about how he could do next year? Although they still have a roster spot.
And you're missing one guy, Tony.
I am.
Who else did they get rid of?
Oh, TJ Leaf. Yeah.
Yeah, TJ Leaf. Yeah, we probably said.
I was like, what? Yeah, they did.
Yeah, and that show you probably sit there and get rid of him. Okay, so let's do that next. Let's talk about the kind of depth and internal growth we see going into next season. So I'm looking at. Oh, you want to start? Go ahead, man.
Oh, people are going to love us coming out of a break and talking over each other. Immediately love that. Yes, I want to start here because internal development is such like an underrated thing for a team like the Pacers where. Sabonis was 23 last year, right? Like, Sabonis is a young dude and is still clearly getting better every year. Turner turned 24 last season, right? Aaron Holiday is young in their rotation. They don't have anyone besides Justin Holiday who I think will age or get worse anytime soon, right? Like, internal development is – you can't count on it. Like, you can't just go, oh, they're all going to be better and we're going to be better as a team, right? You can't just shrug your shoulders and do that. But I think that's kind of an underrated thought of teams getting better, right? Like, certain teams just – keep stockpiling their young guys until they're eventually good. Like, that's what the Magic have done this half decade. They haven't made a big trade in God knows how long. They just kept their guys and they all kept getting better. And lo and behold, they made the playoffs 2 years in a row, right? Like, it just happens over time. And that will happen for this team as well.
Yeah, I think the reason the Pacers honestly didn't also make a move is because I think teams are asking for Aaron Holiday and TJ Warren. I think both those guys are going to take another step. I mean, Warren from maybe this kind of top 70, 80 guy to maybe even a top 50 player, and Holiday from a borderline rotation guy to a consistent rotation guy. And I think that's reasonable. I mean, Warren has spent 1 year in a good system, absolutely just one single year. So give him 2 years in that and see what happens. And then Aaron Holiday, I mean, consistently shows flashes, you know, of being good. He just needs to put it together consistently. And I think it's what you would see from a guy in the third season is finally put it together in that way. So, yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of room for growth in this team. I think, you know, you can expect the same from Brogdon, the same from Oladipo. I mean, depending on health-wise. Turner, I think I would say at this point he is who he is just because he's playing the same kind of spots and whatnot. But that doesn't mean it's not good. It's just he is who he is. But
you could I think see he can get better with a more creative coach for sure.
Yeah, I guess what I mean is if he shoots – let's say he shoots 40% from three on what he took last year. Four attempts. Let's say he takes five attempts. I guess that is better, but it's not like crazy growth, I guess you're not going to see, right? I think like Sabonis could like go from like, what, 18 and a half points to like 20 plus points. We could see that kind of growth with Warren in the same way, right? And to me, that's like a crazy growth than just Turner becoming more efficient, if that makes sense.
No, I think Turner could be used more with the ball. He didn't have the ball enough.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I worry about it because I thought there was a reason he didn't have the ball, but maybe it's just McMillan being, you know, McMillan.
Yeah, Miles Turner is not a guy who should be like reversing the ball when he's in the game. But
anyway. No, but he's so flashy that he put the ball in his hands, he can just dribble to the rim. You know, he can make a play. You know, as long as let him read the defense and make a play, he's shown he can do that at times. He rarely got the opportunity to. I mean, the best time I can remember is I think in the 2018 season against Boston, they let him basically hit the game winner over one of the Morris brothers by just feeding him the ball, letting him. You know, I think he took a step back jumper over the dude and trained it to win, basically tie the game or take the 4-point lead or whatever it was, but. Right. Yeah, I've rarely seen it from him, I guess.
So the other thing you mentioned is depth, and we can talk more about internal development here, or, you know, if you want to go back and listen to any player's season recap, go crazy. You know, the other thing, the depth thing, it's the same roster. So, like, the depth is the same as last year, but depth was a strength last year, right? Like, Jakar is not going to be in the healthy rotation. He can come in and be good anytime. We saw that. They brought him back. Sumner is going to be out of the rotation. He can come in and fill in for a guard and do well anytime. You know, Goga's only going to be playing like 10 minutes. You know, he's useful enough as a third center. Cool. They have something to cover for any – I mean, they had multiple at times. But if they're healthier, like we just said, they have the depth to maintain the same win pace or better they had last year.
Yeah, two of their original top six missed significant amounts of time, and Lamb and Oladipo.
Yes.
And they were still
– at the same position.
Yeah, I mean, they basically just like lost all their shooting guard depth, like because Lamb got hurt pretty early in the year and was like consistently in and out of the lineup with injuries. It felt like, and they pretty much were able to sustain that and be fine. I mean, I thought, you know, the team was like you said, was on pace for 50 plus wins throughout most of the year. Like they didn't seem to just be fine. I mean, the question I guess will be with that depth is, do you get some grumblings of issues because guys want to play more minutes or whatnot? But hopefully, you keep the egos in check. You'll be fine.
Yeah, I don't think that anyone. It will feel undeserving of minutes, right? Jakar signed a minimum contract. You know, that he knows how the team thinks of him. Sumner's the one that may be there.
Yeah, or Holiday. Aaron Holiday.
Yeah, I was going to say, or Aaron Holiday. But I kind of feel like a coaching switch is going to be having Aaron over McConnell more often. But that's just...
I would kind of agree with you, too.
It's just intuition. I have no reason to think that he hasn't coached a game yet. But we'll see. But yeah, I think the depth is still going to be a strength of this team. And because of that, right? Who's going to be worse than last year, right? You know what I mean? Like Justin Holland is an really old player. He could be worse, right? He had maybe a flash in the pan shooting year, but who else is going to be worse? You know what I mean? Like Sabonis might be a little less impactful if he has the ball less, if Bjorkren's spreading out a bit more, but that doesn't mean he's going to be worse. That just means he'll be less statistically relevant, if that makes sense.
I have one guy who could be worse.
Jeremy Lamb could be worse.
I mean, I'm thinking. I don't know. Like, do we think McDermott's year was just like a crazy outlier where he just shot incredible, or do we think it's more like?
No, he's a shooter.
I know, but like, okay, he shot 43.5% from three. I mean, we need to talk about how ridiculous that is. I mean, obviously, like if he shot 40, we'd be happy, but that is worse. You know what I mean?
42.6% in 2017-18 before joining the Pacers.
And then 42.5% in 15-16. Yeah, so I do not think
it was an outlier.
No, I don't think it's, but it's been up and down. I mean, he goes. You know, 42 and 37.
It's 2% above his career average. I do not.
Yes, I know.
That seems to oscillate between high and low for some reason. Well, low is still above 40%.
Yeah, I guess I just worry. I don't know. I mean, maybe I always worry with guys like him who are one dimensional that like a team can figure them out. Yes. But I guess teams rarely do. I mean, that's why they end up staying in the league so long, right? Because they can just continue to do one thing at an extraordinarily high level. I don't know. That's the one guy I worry the most about. I mean. No, I think McConnell might be a little worse because of like minutes stuff like that and spots he's put in. But I don't think like if he was given the same, you know, role, he wouldn't be just as good, I guess.
Out of contract year, McDermott is going to be a flamethrower, guaranteed.
Yeah, you're probably right. What do you think he gets in the offseason considering all the contracts?
Oh, my gosh.
75?
His agent is going to – here's how his agent's going to do this. He'll walk into front office meetings and just hold up a picture of Joe Harris and point at it a few times. That is what we want. I mean, he'll never get $75 million, but –
No, but he'll probably get a full MLE from somebody at least.
Oh, for sure he will. He'll only be 29, and his skills basically is just if he's able to move around the court and shoot, he'll be good for until he's Kyle Korver's age, basically. I mean, he's not as good as Korver. Obviously, Korver's one of the best shooters
but
ever.
He actually is a better body type than Korver for the long run.
He's taller. Like. He's taller, yeah. He's
bigger, too. He's a little bit bigger from just the eye test, I would
say. Okay, that's another thing. I didn't even think about bringing this up in this thing. So, like, is contract year, who do we have? Just McDermott, Vic, Jakar, right? Is that – Are they going to be better than typically? Like, Jakar was contract year last year, and he was great.
Well, what do you say for Aaron Holiday? Because I know he's going to be extension eligible next summer.
Yeah, that's right. He is contract year. That is true. Technically contract year for him, although he has 2 years to prove it in theory, but yes.
I'm trying to think. I guess, like, you could, like, Warren has got 2 years left, but he could be an extension possibility, obviously.
Well. Yeah.
Although
if he keeps balling, he'll play himself out of an extension.
He'll be so good he won't want to take the extension money because he'll be too little. Right. Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah, it's mainly really you're right. It's mainly McDermott. Obviously, McConnell is on a contract year. Obviously,
McConnell. Thank you.
Sumner has 2 years, right?
Yes, correct. Oladipo's the other one, obviously.
Yeah, and Oladipo we'll talk about that later. We'll do that on another podcast.
Was all about Pacers colored glasses, and that isn't good, right? Covering the team is not like. Like, we could do a whole other show about how they could be worse.
Tony, we're usually pessimists. Can we just be positive for, like, once?
You're much more pessimistic than me, typically. Actually, two seasons ago, 17-18, I was the optimistic one, and then we flipped pretty quick.
I mean, I'm a pessimist. I would agree, but like, I think you're also like, you're a little bit pessimist too sometimes. At least maybe you're more off the air than on the air.
Yeah, that's true. Our riffing before and after the show is a little different than the show itself. We should start like a Patreon of like the whole recording. That
would be fun. No, because we curse too much and we do other stuff that we don't want to talk about.
People can hear us talk about Settlers of Catan and talk about Adam the dog after. Yeah, but anyway, the point of the show is to address the most common thing I get now. The first common thing was about Hayward. We did shows on him, then about retaining their own guys. Now it's, they did not get any better. And like, okay, roster-wise, maybe not. Maybe not. You know what I mean? There wasn't a lot they could do hamstring. They really tried. They tried to get Hayward. They tried to get Fred VanVleet, apparently. They apparently tried to get Bogdanovich, all this stuff. They couldn't do it. You know, the kind of power was out of their hands in those situations. But they tried. But now, okay, that's all sunk costs. It didn't happen. Now, how can they get better? Well, here's some of the reasons I think they can.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. So we'll see what happens. Anything else? I don't think I have much else on this topic.
No, we'll see these improvements manifest very soon. I mean, they're playing a preseason game in like probably under 3 weeks or 3 weeks from now, which is insane. Just ridiculous. Yeah,
mid-December, right? Mid-December.
I mean, this is like disgustingly fast. You know what I mean? Like we had 1 month of like kind of chill. Let's just recap last season kind of content. Normally,
we've pretty much not talking about basketball since last October.
I know. It's been crazy.
And we're going to go on like basically 18, 19
One more straight. Pacers colored glasses thing. I'm sure the short training camp really favors teams that already know how all their teammates play. And literally everyone besides Cassius Stanley is going to be a familiar face. And Jalen McHugh. Yeah. Excuse me. I forgot about the trade. I keep forgetting about the trade.
we'll see what happens with him. But
I got nothing else.
All right. Well, as always, you can follow Tony at Teast NBA on Twitter, me at FreeManM5, our podcast at Locked On Pacers. We bring you the show, probably give you at least one or two more shows this week before Thanksgiving. If obviously have a great Thanksgiving, we'll probably hear from us tomorrow. So we'll do another, have a good Thanksgiving then. But that is all for Locked On Pacers podcast. We will see you guys again later.